Hey, this is Regan Bach, managing partner at Better Faster Further, and I wanted to take a second to welcome you to the Better Faster Further podcast. Whether this is your first episode or if you've been with us since the beginning, we're so thankful that you're here. We know that time is limited and we truly appreciate each and every one of you and want to thank you for listening.
Hey everyone, this is Adam Odosky. I'm part of the core team at Better Faster Further and co-host of the podcast. With every episode, we'll feature inspiring stories from bright business minds, accomplished athletes, and inspiring leaders. We'll provide insights, tools, and takeaways to help you expand your capacity. We'll also take it a step further and really try to uncover the deep, hard to reach, and often unexplored places of the human experience. Things like overcoming obstacles, failure, facing fears, pushing through the hard stuff, and ultimately highlighting the growth, opportunity, and lessons learned that comes from choosing the path less traveled. As a serial entrepreneur and now executive coach, ultra endurance athlete, and health coach, I know these discussions are worth their weight in gold.
Hey everyone, this is Regan Bach, co-founder of Better, Faster, Further, and I am here with my colleague, Adam Odosky. Adam, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Regan. I'm doing really well, actually. And we'll get into that as to why here in just a second. But yeah, thanks for asking. How are you?
Doing fantastic. It is a Friday here. It's a little overcast today, but nice to get some cooler weather. I feel like it's just been hot everywhere I look. And last night, my wife and I took our daughters to a concert over at the Greek Theater in Berkeley, and it was just awesome venue. We got to see a band called Milky Chance, who opened up for Young the Giant, and so just kind of we're fans of Milky Chance and became fans of Young the Giant. They put on a good show last night, so that was nice, and got to hang out with some family and friends over there. And excited that you are back in the saddle, my friend. You just had a big adventure, and I think it's what we're going to debrief today.
Yeah, sounds good. Hey, real quick before we get into that debriefing that adventure, how old are your daughters again that you took to the concert?
My oldest is about to be a sophomore, so she's 15. My middle daughter is going into eighth grade, 13, almost 14. And then my little guy is going into fourth grade, so 10.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Wow. I mean, I'm asking because I'm thinking about our daughter's only 5, so she's not anywhere near ready for a concert like that yet, but she loves going to, we have music in the park in Salida every Thursday night during the summer. And she loves going down there and she runs up to the front right by the stage and dances. I mean, she'd get on the stage if they let her. So I was asking, cause I can only imagine that, in a few years, she's going to want to go and see some live music.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Live music is so fun, even if you're not that into the band. I've had a few bands. I used to poo-poo on Mumford & Sons. I felt like they were super jam bandy, and that's not my jam. Some people love that stuff. But I went and saw them live for my first time with friends at Bottle Rock, which is a concert up in Napa, and I've since seen them multiple times. And I was pretty blown away. I'm like, wow, they sound great, super talented. They're up on stage like swearing and just throwing a ton of passion out there. And they won me over. And so I love that. And I now think they're a great band. But live music is cool. And we offered my little guy to come. And he was like, I forget how he said it, but he's like, I don't want this to be my first concert. He wants it to be like a band that he's really stoked on,
Okay, fair enough. Can't blame him for that. I mean, that's pretty awesome self-awareness for a little fella. So good for him.
Exactly. So anyways, you were out of pocket for about a week. You have been training for a big race. I'll let you kind of give more of the details, but you just got back. You completed another 200 plus mile ultra endurance run. I believe it's your third 200 plus one. You've done some other big ones, but correct me if I'm wrong on that front. And, as always, you tend to come out of these things with some new perspectives, some new life lessons, kind of a new lease on life, if you will. So super excited just to, give our audience a chance to look behind the curtain and really understand what it looks and sounds and feels like to, A, do some of these races, but B, what some of those parallels in life and parenthood and business from your perspective are. So why don't you give folks a sense of what you just did and where you've been, and we'll dive into it.
Well, let me give you the background on the race itself, and then we'll get into sort of the lead in and maybe the experience during in the debrief. The race itself, it's called Bigfoot 200. It's based up in Oregon and Washington. in the Cascades. It's about 208 miles long. It's about 46,000 feet of climbing. So, you know, just about 90,000 feet of total elevation change.
Only 46,000?
it's a lot, you know, it's a lot. And the actual climbing itself is what really make this race, you know, super challenging. I mean, the grades were, you know, at some points in the race up to 25% grade. And so that's, I mean, that's steep on fresh legs and it's real steep on tired legs. And, you know, going up is one thing. Everybody's experiences are different, but for me, going down is the real hard part. I can climb okay, but going down is, you know, I'm not a great downhill runner anyhow, but I'm also a timid downhill runner because of my various, you know, physical injuries and such. So that was the real challenging part as far as the trail goes. But the race itself, man, it was gorgeous. We left right at the base of Mount St. Helens and we literally went immediately into the backcountry and didn't emerge again until, you know, the finish line basically. And that was amazing. It was wild. It was beautiful. It was rugged. It was remote. I mean, no cell phone service. The aid stations were, you know, tucked away in these faraway places. It was everything I love about a race, you know, very different than the experience in Cocodona in which, you know, you pass through towns. You know, there's one point in Cocodona where I was running through Sedona and I was like, there's a Whole Foods and a Starbucks. And now I kind of want both of those things and maybe a hot shower and a hotel room, you know, cause you're there, you can experience it. Where this was, you know, you're just in that mindset of, you know, hey, I'm out there until I come back out again. And that was really cool. I loved every bit of that.
We were following you, obviously, you know, as we could, but it was cool because right out the gates, you're at the base of Mount St. Helens and you just wrap around that left-hand side of it and then come out. And then towards the end of the race, I was tracking you and I didn't quite realize it because on the, you know, on a map, it looks relatively flat. And then you get you scroll down, you look at the elevation and it was just like straight up and then peaking across the top. It looked like an EKG. And then you like drop down the other side into the finish line. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was intense. And going around Mount St. Helens was super cool. I mean, we got to go through the blast zone, which was awesome. It was huge boulders. I mean, not the greatest for, you know, elegant, smooth, fast running, but really pretty and very unique. And so that was awesome. We get to climb up over high alpine passes, you know, up above tree line. And I remember I was with a few people going up over the first pass, which was really high. And, you know, we were all just like, this is why we do these things, you know, just like, so happy to be in such a beautiful place within a community of people who are willing to, you know, explore what's possible. It was just such a great feeling, you know? So yeah, that was a race in general. Just beautiful. Maybe my favorite of the three 200s that I've done. I think actually definitely my favorite of the three 200s that I've done.
You know, it's interesting when I was chatting with you, I think you were even like in your hotel room after the race, but you were like, that was hands down both the hardest and the best or most rewarding of the three. And that was kind of right. You know, you're probably still delirious from just doing it, but, just, you know, technically challenging, you know, the elevation changes. And then obviously the scenery and the remoteness just make that super unique.
You bet. 100%. Yeah. 100%. And I think I was sharing with you earlier that it was kind of it was a cool feeling to at the same time be stepping way outside my comfort zone, but also in parallel moving into an environment that I was super comfortable in. So stepping outside of my comfort zone, because this race tested every limitation, you know, that I had or tested every, you know, ounce of strength and, you know, whatever that I had. And that was pushing me way outside of my comfort zone. But at the same time, you know, I love the mountains and I love being deep in the mountains and I'm comfortable being deep in the mountains. And so as we got farther and farther into the backcountry, the more I felt kind of at home, felt peaceful. And so it was for me personally, it was kind of the perfect environment to step outside of my comfort zone, you know, within a race environment, push those physical limitations and those mental limitations, because I just was in a place that I love. It was really cool.
Well, it's interesting because you and I were talking and, you know, your comfort in the backcountry is not consistent across everyone, right? Like there are people who that's actually a big challenge for them, both the remoteness, you know, being deep in the wilderness and not necessarily that it's scary, but it's like a new set of stimuli coming at them, right? And very different than the Cocodona, where you're in not only a desert environment, but like you've got connectivity with towns and humans and whatever. This is, I mean, and the Pacific Northwest, dude, it's thick up there, right? Like it's a unique ecosystem, to say the least.
It's, I mean, so for example, the sun set, you know, the sun was setting at, you know, call it 8:30 or something like that, but it was dark at like 7:00. You know, when you're in the forest kind of thing, you know what I mean? So, you know, maybe those aren't the exact times, but the point is that it was dark earlier than it was dark outside the forest, dark in the forest earlier than it was dark outside the forest. But yeah, you're right. I think, you know, for people who don't, you know, who are uncomfortable in the backcountry for whatever reason, maybe they just don't have the experience or whatever it is, this would have been an incredibly challenging race because, you know, again, to compare to Cocodona, the sleep stations at Cocodona, they were like inside, heated, you know, with four walls around you. You used a bathroom that had a flush toilet, you know, all the things. But this, you know, one of the aid stations that we moved into at one point in the middle of the night, it was like 2 a.m, had to sleep. And I said, hey, do you have any place to sleep here at this aid station? She said, yeah, there's a couple of, you know, pads on the ground out behind the cook station, just there in the woods. I'm like, oh, thank goodness. For me, I was like, oh, this is wonderful. It's a Therm-a-Rest in the dirt under the stars with a wool blanket. For me, I was like, this, it couldn't be any better. You know, I laid down, you know, turned on my alarm on my phone to wake me up in a couple hours and like conked right out because it was just, that was the ideal, right? But I can imagine if that's not something that you've experienced before, that could be hard to do, you know, very, very, you know, both physically uncomfortable, but also like maybe emotionally and mentally uncomfortable too.
Totally. Totally. It sounds like your body held up. It sounds like you're feeling pretty good right now, mentally, physically, emotionally. You know, we were chatting earlier and you were saying one of the benefits of doing those things and really pushing it hard is that, you know, you come back and everything's a little sweeter, right? That coffee tastes a bit better. That couch feels a little bit more cushy. I love that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the life is just, I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, it's amazing anyway, but it's just a little bit more amazing, a little sweeter after you finish a 200. You notice all the things, right? You know, a hot shower after something like that just really feels damn good, you know? Or yeah, a fresh cup of like really good coffee is just damn good. You know, you know, it's like you just, it's cool because you get to appreciate the things that we take for granted day to day. You really get to appreciate them after you don't have them for quite a few days. So yeah, it's been great. And you're right. Yeah. My body held up really well, which is so surprising, Regan. And I think, you know, a little bit about what I was dealing with going into it, but you know, as the listeners know, as we've debriefed these races before, I have hip impingements in both hips. So it's like kind of bone on bone in both hips and torn labrums and, you know, whatnot. It can be quite uncomfortable. And because of that, my training was different in between Cocodona and Bigfoot. I couldn't run as much. You know, I couldn't go out and climb. I couldn't descend strong and like build that, you know, that muscle memory. And so I spent a lot of time on the rower. I spent a lot of time on the bike trainer. I mean, I ran some too, but I had to be cautious because I was really hoping to stand on the start line feeling physically, you know, put together. Of course that didn't happen. You know, what happened is I developed some Achilles tendonitis in my right foot and then a significant case of plantar fasciitis in my left foot. And, you know, to the point where I was walking through the Denver International Airport last Wednesday on my way to fly to Portland. And I was limping because the plantar fasciitis in my left foot was intense. Like, you've got to be kidding me. To the point, I landed in Portland and I was staying, you know, a couple of hours, you know, into the mountains next to the race finish line. And I was on the phone calling a podiatrist to see if I could get a last minute appointment, which I did. And I got an appointment for Thursday with a podiatrist and went in and he took a good look at my feet. And he said, okay, these are your two options. Basically, we can give you a steroid injection. There's a risk of rupturing, or we can give you a oral case or an oral round of steroids, which, you know, will help manage the inflammation, which is what's causing this pain. I said, well, we're not going to do the injection because that seems like a silly risk, right? The thing's definitely going to rupture, you know, running 200 miles up and down the Cascades. So we're not doing that. And then I opted not to take the oral steroid either because
I've never taken one before and I didn't know how my body would react. And so ultimately I made the decision that the pain I know is better than the pain I don't. And I taped my feet for tendonitis and for plantar fasciitis and let go of any expectation whatsoever about the race and left that start line just feeling grateful that I was there and was just going to do what I could do. They held up. I mean, it wasn't comfortable, but they held up and they got me through. And it actually ended up being a great race. I did well, ran well, I slept well, I ate well, I hydrated well. I don't know. It was a really unique experience.
Yeah, that's really cool. And earlier we were chatting, and I forget how you said it, but it was just like this. You know, you're talking about how sweet things are on the back end of some of these races, but you know, feeling gratitude towards A, just kind of being able to do this, but how that gratitude was kind of a well of inspiration and motivation for you. Maybe you can say a little bit more about that.
You bet. Yeah. And so it's really easy, and probably sometimes necessary to, you know, use pain as a fuel source, right? To use frustration or anger as a fuel source. I've certainly done that in past races and in life, you know, but this race, you know, my coach, Joe, and all the listeners, you know, may remember Joe from a previous podcast. We had him on, Joe McConaughey. We'll post the link to that show in the show notes of this one so people can re-listen to Joe. But anyway, he called before the race and he said, you know, not in these exact words, but the spirit of what he said was, you know, treat this like this could be your last 200-mile race and just appreciate every moment, you know, that you're out there. And in short, I did. I was grateful that I even had the opportunity to stand on the start line for all of it. You know, grateful that, you know, our team was supportive of something like this, that my wife and daughter are supportive of something like this, that I did all the training on the trail for every ultra I've ever done with my dog Capri, who's a 10-year-old Aussie Shepherd. He can still knock out, you know, an insane amount of miles every week. Grateful that my body, although it has, you know, had lots of injuries over the years and has some now, was still standing up and still ready to jump into the race. And I carried that gratitude throughout the entire race. And I will tell you that if you fuel yourself from a true place of gratitude and love in your heart, that is what will get you through hard times. That is the sustainable fuel source. Much more sustainable than anger, and much more sustainable than trying to use pain as a motivator, right? That's it, man. That's the magic right there.
Thanks for being here, everyone. At Better, Faster, Further, we specialize in helping leaders, teams, and organizations maximize peak performance. Our goal as a business is to help build organizations that execute effectively, to create high-performing teams, and to help leaders bolster their overall capacity.
We're unique and we're different. Our real-world, in-the-trenches experience comes from building and scaling teams and companies of all sizes. When you partner with Better, Faster, Further, you're not going to get a recent MBA graduate. What you will get is a team with decades of experience coming from industry veterans, academics, and leaders who have been in the most critical roles of startups, growing companies, and enterprise titans. Not only do we make recommendations, but we roll up our sleeves and get our hands dirty right next to you.
We truly believe that organizations are at the epicenter of social change. And by creating positive shifts within those organizations, we create ripple effects that have profound and lasting impacts on communities and society at large. If you want to become a more effective leader, if you want to create a high-performing team, or if you need to scale your company in ways that will stand the test of time, then Better, Faster, Further is for you. Visit our website at betterfasterfurther.com or email us directly at bff@betterfasterfurther.com. Thanks for your time. Now let's get back to our discussion.
I use frustration and, you know, challenge and adversity as like motivation, but I like what you say in that it's just a much more durable fuel source or source of motivation when it's coming from a place of gratitude. And it's, I think we can lose sight of that pretty easily. And like you said, there's so much to be grateful for. The fact that you could even be on that, you know, you've had injuries and you could bitch and moan and complain about those injuries, or you can be thankful that like your body held up, right? And you were able to get to the race. There was a million reasons for you to back out of it beforehand. you know, when you list off the litany of pain points you have physically, you have more than enough good excuses to not go to that race, but you push through.
That's it. And that's, I mean, you know, we work with a lot of entrepreneurs and startup founders and CEOs at Better, Faster, Further. And I think that's a perspective that we can all adopt more in the professional space too, is that, you know, we have a choice, right? We can be frustrated about the shitstorm that's in front of us, the pain that we're feeling, or we can choose to be grateful for why we even have the opportunity to feel this pain, right? Why we even have the opportunity to be frustrated or have the challenge in front of us, right? And if we feel grateful and we really fall in love with the process and we fall in love with what we're great at, then that just changes the whole equation, right? And so that's what I did in this race. And it wasn't a forced thing. It came very naturally. It was just like, look, man, it's like, yeah, these things hurt, but man, am I grateful that they hurt and I'm still here, like still standing.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, I think therein lies probably the biggest lesson in life that many of us need to learn is, you know, I would argue the ability to be present, which is very difficult. And, you know, to tap into this groundswell source of gratitude. And I think if more of us could do that well, you know, genuinely, the world would be a better place. Families would be happier. Businesses would be healthier. So I think that's pretty profound, my friend.
Yeah, 100%. And for me, it's taken, you know, kind of a lifetime of going about it that another way and continuing to bang my head on the wall to get to this place where I'm starting to understand that there's a different source of fuel that's more meaningful and more that causes more good or creates more good in the world than it does frustration. But now that I've, you know, sort of had a taste of that, I can tell you right now, I won't be going back.
That's awesome, dude. I mean, some people climb Everest to find that. Some people spend months in a Buddhist monastery deep in the, you know, Nepalese hills, and others run 200 miles to crack the code on that. So it's great that you've been able to truly find that in a meaningful way. And you know, not to necessarily change gears and not to put you on the spot here, but I'm wondering, like, this is your third 200. You've done some other ultras that are equally meaningful, but you know, now that you're on the back end of this, like, where does your mind go around kind of what comes next just for Adam outside of the workspace, like on the personal side?
That's a great question, Regan. And I don't know that I've fleshed that out yet. I mean, I do know that I've been finding a lot of joy lately in teaching my daughter to ride a boogie board down in the river at home. She, you know, we built a surf wave in town here. And so I've been surfing a little bit, but there's also kind of like a little kid's wave that's upriver, 100 meters or so. And so she's got a boogie board and a wetsuit and you know, kind of teaching her to swim in a life jacket in the river and teaching her to boogie board a little bit. And she's just been having a great time. So I think there's going to be a lot more of that, you know, a lot more of, you know, supporting her to uncover what lights her up on the personal side. And you know, so of course, spending time with my wife and my daughters and my family on the athletic front. I mean, it's a great question. You know, I'm not one that feels like I have to continue to do these things to feel fulfillment. I don't have identity wrapped up in them as if, like, if I don't do a 200 in the next 12 months, is my identity going to suffer? I mean, the answer is definitely not, you know? So I think I'm going to kick it, man. I'm going to enjoy myself for a little bit. And I have a feeling that life will unfold organically and naturally. And then, you know, the next thing, whatever it is, will present itself.
Dude, I love it. I've got the Tribe Called Quest theme in my head. Can I kick it? Yes, you can, going on.
There you go.
I'm proud of you for being able to do that and separate your identity from those big races. I know a lot of people are really wrapped up in either what they do professionally or what they do on the athletic front. And I've known that to be true about you, that you're able to separate the two. And well, dude, it's always a pleasure to debrief these things with you. There's always these cool life's lessons that I learn, you know, vis-a-vis through much of your experience. And looking forward to whatever is next. Nice to have you back in the saddle at Better, Faster, Further as well. You're always missed when you're out there, and looking forward to all the amazing things that come next, both personally and professionally. So this is awesome. Any other kind of closing thoughts or words or anything else you want to share with the audience before we wrap this thing up?
Yeah, you bet. So the first thing that comes to mind is you've got a race coming up in a little over a week that is, sounds like a pretty challenging event. And I don't know if you want to share a little bit about your experience coming up and, you know, how you've been getting ready and how you're feeling going into that.
A friend and colleague of ours, Jeremy Zajon, is just a great guy. And we've had him on the podcast as well, roped me into doing what's called the Double Dipsy Race in Marin County 5 or 6 years ago. I think this is my fifth or sixth one, something like that. But it is a race that starts out at the beach, at Stinson Beach. And you do a couple climbs, you know, ascents and descents kind of into Muir Woods and up and around Mount Tam. And then you drop into the town of Mill Valley. Then you turn around and you go back. So that's what makes it the double. The single Dipsy is really famous. It's one of the oldest kind of races in the U.S. or something like that. It's got some storied history. They've been doing it for a really, really long time. But what makes it unique is it's kind of like a glorified hike, man. I mean, you're climbing flights of stairs. You are climbing routes. There are creeks that flow through it. It's 99% single track, but you're out by the Pacific Ocean. You're literally running in Muir Woods, which makes it feel like you should see Ewoks and stuff like that running around. Big ferns and redwoods, and then you wrap around Mount Tamalpais, which is kind of the highest peak in this area, but it's just kind of a big anchor for a lot of the communities out here. And you know, for me, it's a good challenge. I am not a runner. I kind of pride myself on having not liked running my entire life, but find myself, you know, slowly doing some of these races. So it's a good challenge for me. It ends up being about, I think it's 15.5 miles, something like that. But it's a hard 15, and you know, it takes me like 3 hours to do it. And the people that win it do it in almost half that time, like in an hour and 45 minutes. And they're running up, they're running across, and they're running down. So for me, it's kind of, you know, hike and move as fast as you can on the uphills, you know, run wherever you can. And I enjoy the downhills, but to be honest, on the back end, that's what starts to hurt my knees and the thighs and stuff is just lots of uneven wood, and the steps aren't, you know, it's not like you're running up concrete steps and they're all pretty. You know, it's these forested steps that everything's uneven. And every year you see people covered in mud that have fallen, slipped, you know, thrashed up knees and stuff. But the only other thing that makes this race really cool is, you know, there's like, they handicap it. So they'll have the 80 plus year olds go first. Surprisingly, there's like three or four men and women that are in the 80 plus crew. Then they do like 75 and older, 70 and older, 60 and older. And so they give people a handicap to start up front. So, you know, typically the faster people tend to start later in that race, but it's really age dependent. And so those that win, one of the things that makes this race really unique and challenging is you're on a trail with like 400 other people, but the fastest people start at the end. So they pass you on the way, and then they get to the, you know, the turnaround spot, and then they pass you on the way back. So half the battle is just being on a single track with, you know, mud and roots and not much room and people passing in both directions. So they don't allow headphones. You know, there's a lot of please and thank yous and on your left, and but it's pretty fun. But that comes up next weekend, and yeah, that's my forcing function to get off the couch, move the body more, and get some miles in. So.
Good stuff. And how you feeling? You feel good?
Yeah. Again, you know, life is full. Summer's been full. I, you know, you never get to run quite as much as you want in prep for this. But I had been doing a run probably a month and a half ago, and something popped in my calf. And pop is kind of a strong word. It really wasn't a pop. It was just all of a sudden I felt sharp pain in my left calf, and strangely that pain kind of moved around over the following days, but I had to stop running for a bit, and then I ran and it kept hurting and it just wouldn't heal. It didn't feel like a muscle tear, but I couldn't quite figure it out. I did not go see a professional for it, which I probably should have. But as I massaged it out and gave it some time, and a friend of mine for a lot of reasons, but had a brother pass away about 15 years ago. He had fallen off some scaffolding, and in honor of that, he runs the San Francisco Marathon every year. And I've done it a couple times with him. So I did that a few weeks ago. My calf did hurt, kind of seized up on mile 3 or 4, and I had to kind of work through it that whole race. But since then, have given it some space, and it feels to be a lot better. So I'm sure it'll emerge at some point on that race, just because you're flexing your calf and quad so much. But right now I feel pretty good. And again, just grateful to be able to do it. And, you know, you always get a little, I don't know what the right word is, anxious and nervous, but also excited. And I think that's a good sign, because it means you're challenging yourself. So
100%. Well, that's great, man. I'm excited to see and hear how that race goes for you. Last year you had set a goal for 3 hours, and I think you finished it like, I don't know, like 3:05 or something like that. So, you know, maybe on your way back, you know, after you hit the turnaround point on your way back, if you have to pee, just, you know, hold that last pee, you know.
Yeah.
Just push to the end. That's literally the deal
right there. And for me, I love having a good, you know, goal. And you know, honestly, and I mean this in all honesty, the goal is just to finish, because every year it's so different. I've had like really bad cramps in the legs. I've had, you know, sometimes it's just blazing hot, and that heat, like everything just slows down when it's hot. My favorite times are when it's actually like cold and misty and foggy, because you know, it keeps you cool and you can actually move at a good clip without dehydrating and stuff. But we'll see. Those are the curves. So I care less about the time and more about, you know, crossing the finish line, knowing that I pushed it hard and that I feel pretty good. So historically, I think there's my first race, I didn't have any cramping. And I had a really good time. You know, those middle few races, I struggled with cramps and maybe some dehydration. So I've in working with you, I've changed some of that. My race last year was one of my better ones as far as how I physically felt and just kind of the times and stuff. So there's people that are way faster than I am. I'm kind of Mr. Slow and Steady, but I do have my own goals for that. So
good man. And then, you know, Louis, also your partner, and one of the other managing partners of Better, Faster, Further, he's got the Chicago Marathon coming up, and then he's got 3 back-to-back half marathons coming up a week later in Tahoe. So, you know, we're a small team of you know, people who find a lot of meaning in doing these things outside of work that are, you know, sort of movement-based, that are challenging. And I think we all do them for our own reasons, but it's fun to talk about them as a team. There's lots of life lessons that, you know, provide impact both personally and professionally. I think it's great that we do that together as a team. So.
Totally. I mean, over the years working with Louis, it's been fascinating, because he's probably, you know, in recent years, the healthiest he's ever been, right? Like that guy didn't exercise anywhere close to what he does now. And he got into biking and running and doing high impact training, and has really kind of found his source of, I think it's therapy for him, but also motivation in running. And he's super into it. And, has been doing a lot of it. And you know, our colleague Lou Naranjo as well had signed up for the SF half marathon and had been doing a lot of training and exercise, gearing up for that. And I just applaud him in that challenge. And, you know, the irony in this whole thing is I think each of us in our own ways, probably directly attributed to running, have like physical ailments associated with that, you know, there's 4 of us in various levels who run and are training to do these races, and all 4 of us have pretty much aches and pains associated with that we're having to work through. So I don't quite know how to reconcile that. I think running is good for you in so many ways, and it's really hard on the body and others. So I don't know what else to say about that.
Yeah, well, I can make the same argument about business. Great for you in so many ways, and really hard in so many others. So, I mean, I think doing all these things, you know, independently, you know, outside of work, but also talking about them and working through them together is really impactful. And we've had some of the client companies that we work with, they've really been appreciative of our perspectives that we use from some of these things that we do outside of the office. And I think that's really cool too. It's kind of fun. It's very unique in this world. I don't know if you call it management consulting, but our approach is so different. But we'll link to the show with Jeremy Zajon, because we did an interview with Jeremy, or had a conversation with Jeremy, which was awesome. So you're running the Double Dipsy with him. We'll link to that. And we'll link to the show that we did with Louis at the very beginning as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I would absolutely love that. And yeah, I look forward to, continue. We've been on a bit of a roll on these recording of the podcast. So we'll be pumping out some really great content. We've got some killer humans who have been our guests and more to come. So we took a little hiatus just due to life and family and 200-mile races and work during the summer. So we weren't quite as consistent over the last 2 months as we've wanted to be, but we're back in the saddle and back on track. And I'm thrilled to kind of finish the year strong, both on the podcasts themselves, the quality of the guests, the content that's coming out, and super excited about what we're doing at Better, Faster, Further. I mean, the discussions that we recently had at our kind of strategic offsite, I think are kind of game-changing, and we as a business continue to learn and grow and develop, and we're going to get bigger. We're going to be able to provide more, value. We're just partnering with some super cool humans and organizations, and really excited about our clientele. And yeah, man, I'm stoked you're part of the team. You've been a huge addition, Adam. Super thankful, and obviously very appreciative to everyone else that's part of the Better, Faster, Further family. But stoked you finished the race. Stoked you came back in one piece. Love the notion of using gratitude as the groundswell of motivation. And let's just keep rocking and rolling and building momentum, my friend.
You bet. Thanks, Regan. Stoked to be here, man.
Yeah, you got it, man. I will see you in the flesh at some point really soon.
All right, sounds great.
Take care of Colorado for me.
Be my pleasure.
Awesome, dude. Hey, man, have a great day. I'll talk to you soon.
Catch you later.
Thanks for joining us today on the Better, Faster, Further podcast. We're honored to have you here and to share these insights, stories, and best practices with you. 100% of our business comes from word of mouth. We focus on delivering the promise, building strong relationships with our clients, and then let the results speak for themselves.
If you or someone in your network would benefit from speaking with us directly, please reach out. Our website is betterfasterfurther.com, and we can be found on LinkedIn. Or you can email us directly at bff@betterfasterfurther.com. Please like, comment, share, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen. We hope you join us on our next episode. And until then, stay positive. Keep working hard, and we'll see you on the flip side.